Well, good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for their well wishes and congratulations on Shannon and my wedding. We actually did go through with it, and we're still happily married after 3 days. So, thank you very much. Well, the Day of Atonement has tremendous meaning, as John Philbrick was just saying in his prayer. And for the world to have at one with God, to be reconciled to God, two things have to happen. And those things are pictured by this day. Let's turn to Leviticus 16, because in Leviticus 16 it talks about two goats, and talks about what these goats symbolize and what it means for the world. So let's start in Leviticus 16 and verse 7. It's talking about the high priest taking two goats and what they're going to do with those goats and what they symbolize. So starting in verse 7, it says, "And he shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, one lot for the Lord, and the other lot," the King James says scapegoat, but it's for the Azazel goat. And in my margin, it says the goat of removal. And if you look it up in the Hebrew, it says the goat of departure. So one goat is for the Lord, and the other goat is for Azazel. Verse 9, "And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell, and offer him for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be Azazel shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him, and to let him go into the wilderness." Then dropping down to verse 15, "Then shall he kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and bring his blood within the veil, and do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat." So this is the reference that John was talking about. "And he shall make an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions in all their sins. And so he shall do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remains among them in the midst of their uncleanness." And then down in verse 20, I'll just read the whole thing before we talk about symbolism. And actually, this is written on the front of the bulletin. But starting at verse 20, it says, "And when he has made an end of reconciling the holy place and the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar, he shall bring the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both his hands on the head of the live goat, and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions in all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. And the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities unto a land not inhabited, and he shall let go the goat into the wilderness." So we see that there are two goats mentioned here. One is symbolic of Jesus Christ, and that will be talked about later. And the other goat is symbolic of Satan the devil. And the sins of all the children of Israel will be confessed over this goat and the blame laid where it belongs. And then that goat will be let go in the wilderness. And this coincides with Revelation 20 and verse 1. Let's read Revelation 20 and verse 1, because this is Satan's fate. Revelation 21, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. And cast him into a bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that, he'll be loosed for a little season. But we're also told in Jude that his final fate is to be cast into outer darkness, and that he will, that the blackness of darkness is reserved for him forever. So how much influence does Satan have? How much influence does this being have upon the world today? Well, he's called the prince of the power of the air. And he's also called the spirit that works in the children of disobedience. So he has a tremendous influence on this world. He's called the god of this world. And in reconciling the world to God, not only does Jesus Christ, you know, in his blood need to cleanse us from sin, but also the influence of Satan needs to be removed. Have you ever thought about how different the world would be without Satan? Just how different it would be. You know, through the example in Leviticus 16, it says that Aaron put his hands on the goat and confessed over him all the sins, that he laid the blame on that goat, and then let him go in the wilderness. So it seems to me that a tremendous amount of the blame for the sins of Israel were laid upon Satan's head. And taking this influence away should make a huge difference. You know, in the world tomorrow, not only will the knowledge of God cover the earth like the waters cover the sea, but also this influence will be gone. So I've thought about this quite a bit, and it's like, you know, what would be different simply without this influence? And I think that the biggest thing is, you know, we've always heard that, you know, there's the way of give and there's the way of get. There's the way of competition, there's the way of cooperation. And if this self-centered, competitive spirit was gone, that it would make just a tremendous difference. There are a lot of things in this world that are, you know, tremendously contrary to God's way. There are a lot of things in our society itself that are legal, but aren't necessarily moral. In the Bible, it talks about oppressing the poor. And I think that's one of the biggest things that will change. In this world, governments, institutions, religions oppress the poor, whether it's through usury. You know, people can get trapped in credit card debt and end up with interest rates that are tremendously high, and it's almost impossible to dig your way out of that because you're falling into the hole faster than you can dig yourself out. So there's this oppressing of the poor. And the ways that that happens just goes on and on and on. I did a remodel for a furniture rental place, and I got to know how that works, and it's like, wow. It was just another example to me on how this works. Satan is also very proud. There's all the, you know, the pride and the things that go along with that. Deceit. Deceit came into the world through Satan the devil. And the deceit that we see, and the whole legal profession basically has to do with trying to make it where, depends on which side of the fence you're on, but I know our corporate attorney was all about trying to make it where people couldn't take advantage of us. So it's There are just so many things. You know, the war, of course. Because, you know, Satan, and in this world, things are decided by war. You know, there was war in heaven and will be war in heaven again because of Satan. So there are so many things that will change because of this. That's part of the meaning of this day, is that this influence and this being that is causing so much of this trouble is going to be put away. Satan is called our adversary and hinders us at every turn, tries to influence us. So this adversary will be put away, and the tremendous influence that he has on this world. So there are two things that need to happen for the world to be reconciled to God. One of the first things that will happen, pictured by this day, as a part of this day, is that Satan the devil will be bound. He will no longer be able to influence us. And that will open the way for the rest of the meaning of this day, and also for the Feast of Tabernacles to come. So it's an absolutely wonderful thing, even though we're afflicting our souls, to know that this being will be cast into outer darkness, that our adversary, the devil, will be finally not able to influence us anymore. So it's just another wonderful part of this day.